Welcome to Braille Revival League. This is your incoming president, Steve Fort. I'd like to welcome all of you. And first of all, I'm going to introduce what's come to be the head table. And I'm going to start with our past president, Marlene O'Neill.
Okay, I'm Marlene O'Neill, and I am the past president of BRLC.
John Ross, I am the treasurer.
And I am, where are we? I am Keith Johnson, the present and vice president. Okay? Okay.
I am Katrina McCurdy, a board
Get on the mic.
Representing the north of the state.
You're not on the mic.
I'm sorry. I am BRLC, Katrina McCurdy, BRLC member. I'm a board member. Okay. All right. Here we go.
Okay, what we're going to do here is...
Keith William... Corresponding secretary.
Okay,
and this is recording secretary Bob Turner.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Linda Porrell. I'm the other board member of BRLC.
Okay, why don't we all go around and introduce ourselves?
I'm Lee Morton from San Diego Chapter.
Hi, Lee.
Hi.
Roger Hello.
Yeah.
Roger Peterson from Mountain View, California.
Welcome, Roger.
Former board member and stuff.
You're going to be my parliamentarian and tell me if I'm...
Hi. Good morning, everyone. Eric Calhoun, member of the Greater Long Beach Chapter, the California Council of the Blind. You guys,
that's Eric there? Calhoun from the Greater Long Beach Chapter.
Larry Freeman, San Diego Chapter.
Just a minute. Rick Hansom, Glendale Burbank Chapter, I guess. I don't know.
Judy Wilkins and Winifred Downing wrote me a note reminding me that all previous editors of the BC have been members, and was I going to fail in that regard? And I said, how silly of me. So I've just paid up.
Welcome. Okay, is there anyone else?
Albert Contreras, Temple City.
And I'm Steve Fort, a member of Bavia Chapter, originally from LA, now from the city of Alameda, and newly elected BRLC president. I'm going to continue with, first of all, do we have a quorum? Did anyone count the number of people that are here? Okay. Rob, would you like to, I can hold the mic.
Sure. Oh, it's on the mic stand. Okay, yeah, if you can. Right about there. Okay, this is the minute from the spring convention. President O'Neill convened the meeting at 9:05 a.m. All officers were present. There were approximately 15 attendees who introduced themselves by name and chapter. The others joining as the morning progressed. The treasurer collected both membership dues and donations for the Braille Challenge contest. Our contribution
will help pay transport expenses for a needy student. BRLC has a booth at the convention to sell a delicious fudge. Customers can purchase $2 or $5 bags. Also for sale, Chico bags, which are handy for shopping. Rob Turner read the minutes from the fall 2009 membership meeting. The minutes were approved as read. John Ross presented his treasurer's report. The beginning balance was $3,014.25. Total income, $985. Total expenses, $676.42. Ending balance, $3,322.83. The report was accepted as read. Mike Keithley will mail a thank you letter to Lynn Laird for embossing our Braille Writer newsletter at a significant discount. Keith Johnson, John Ross, and Winifred Downing performed their fundraising duties so well that Marlene asked them to continue serving. All three agreed to do so. The nominating committee, consisting of Kathy Skivers, Linda Perel, and Keith Johnson, also agreed to continue serving. Elections were held for president, vice president, and board position one. The nominating committee slate was President Steve Vice President Keith Johnson, board position one, Katrina McCurdy. If Keith is elected vice president, the nominating committee will recommend Linda Perel to fill the board position, board two position. The director two term ends this fall. The entire slate was elected by acclamation in separate votes. Roger agreed to serve as BRLC delegate at the ACB convention. I should say the BRLC delegate at the convention in Phoenix. So to be delegate to the national group. Marlene announced that he'd be delegate for BRLC. Okay. Marlene announced that $354 had already been collected for the Braille Challenge contest. A motion passed to reimburse Winifred for the $250 cost of the Chico bags. The motion carried. The business meeting was adjourned at approximately 10 a.m. Our guest speaker was Noel Runyon, a blind engineer who has been involved in the development of several products for the blind. He is currently participating in a joint effort to develop a low-cost Braille display and note taker. The group, which includes Dean Blasey, the National Braille Press, and other researchers, expect to produce a prototype in a year or so. It may use a new technology called electroactive polymer. Respectfully submitted, Rob Turner, Recording Secretary.
Okay, are there any additions or corrections to the minutes?
Mr. President,
I make a motion that we accept the minutes as read.
John
seconded. Okay. All in favor of accepting the minutes as read, signified by saying aye. Opposed? Abstentions. Before John gives the treasurer's report, I'd like to remind everyone that dues are due and payable. And Rex Ransom is taking down confirmation and collecting dues. And John Roth will be circulating among you to collect for the Braille Challenge. That's the our yearly contribution to a very young students who have to be accompanied by their parents to go to LA. We pay the transportation, raise money for the transportation, and the total amount last year, I think, was something like $331. So John will be collecting for that later on. And without any further ado, here's John for the treasurer's report. I'd like to hold the mic.
Okay. The beginning balance was $3,322.80. Total expenditures from the close of the last convention until now were $1,383. Total income was $1,270.83. Hold on, wait a minute. I'm sorry. Total expenditures were $1,383, and total income was $1,270.83. Thank you.
May I make a motion to accept the minutes as read, or treasurer's report as read? Rob seconded.
Yeah. Okay, all in favor of accepting the treasurer's report, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Before we go any further, I would like to thank our outgoing recording secretary who has done a really fabulous job, Rob Turner, and let's all give him a hand. Is there someone from the nominating committee who would like to present the slate? Yes.
Thank you, Steve. Our work was easy. People seem to be eager to serve in these positions, and that's wonderful for BRLC and for all of us. So the
Could we
nominating.
Have everyone's attention, please? Sorry. Go ahead.
Nominating committee continues to be myself, Kathy Skivers, and Keith Johnson. So the positions we had to fill were recording secretary, corresponding secretary, and board position two. So the nominees for recording secretary, Marlene O'Neill. For corresponding secretary, Mike Keithley, and for board position two, yours truly, Linda Porrell. So that is the slate that we wish to present. Thank you.
Okay, let's begin first with, would it be in order to continue with the nominations recording secretary? Are there any nominations from the floor? Are there any nominations on the floor for recording secretary? Are there any nominations from the floor for recording? My mic cut. Okay, is there a second? Okay, all in favor of closing the nations for recording secretary signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Well, congratulations, Marlene. You're our new recording secretary.
Well, I don't know if I can... I don't. This is a great following, though. I don't know how I'm going to be as well as good as Rob Turner, but because he was and still is. I'm cute. Thank you, Raj. What do you want? Anyway, I don't know. I'm just trying to say that I am honored to have this position. I'm honored to have this position, and I want you to know that secretaries. You know, people always wonder about that. That's a very hard job, and Rob did it splendidly. And I just want to say that I will do, hopefully, as well. Thank you.
Yeah, so let's give her a hand. Marlene O'Neill was the recording secretary for Bavia Chapter and for 3 years and did really well under very difficult circumstances. She had to move because of a fire and still got the minutes to us even though she was on the East Coast. So I think that bodes well and is worth special recognition. Okay. The next office is corresponding secretary. Okay, nominations are open. First of all, Mike Keithley is nominating slate for corresponding secretary. Are there any nominations from the floor? Are there any nominations from the floor? Okay, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Mike, congratulations. Do you want to say a few words?
Right, Mike. Yeah, give us a speech.
Well, I want to thank you people for electing me as corresponding secretary. I will write the letters as best I can. Thank you very much.
Okay. Next, we have the number two board position. Linda Perel is on the nominating slate. Are there any nominations from the floor? Are there any nominations from the floor?
Will the nomination be closed to be accepted?
Yes. Yeah.
Recording number two board position by acclamation. Is that the motion?
Yes.
And it's been second. And Turner second. Yeah. Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Congratulations. Linda, would you like to say a few words?
Only three? All right, these are the three. Viva Winifred Downing.
Hey, all right.
I only hope I can serve with one-tenth the passion that my dear friend and mentor, who can't be with us today, has served for BRLC. So she's our guiding light.
Yes, John.
Thank you, folks. We collected here with a small group here. We collected $87 for the Pearl Challenge. Thank you.
Yeah.
Speaking of friends and mentors, just before I came into the room, I spoke on the phone with Kathy Skivers, and she says to tell everybody hello and to tell her if they're collecting for the Braille Challenge.
Nothing is by her.
Okay. our next item, I believe, would be fundraising, if we want to discuss anything about fundraising. John, is there, you have anything?
Well, for those of you who were involved, last year when we did the raffle, we made $1,200 from it, you know, and I know it's a lot of work, you know, but that's one thing we might consider doing, you know, say every 2 years, and you know, because it really worked for us, and also the fudge went really well, and Katrina was a big help with that, you know, and the bags went well, you know. How we could install tote bags, you know, because those were always a hit, and maybe a 250 raffle, you know, but those are thoughts on it. Okay, thank you.
Shortly after the convention, I'm going to have Katrina. No, wait a minute. Who's on the nominee, the fundraising committee? Winifred Downing, John Ross, and Keith Johnson meet after the convention, and we'll come up with a plan. We lost a very dear member this year, Alice Parkinson. Many of you knew. And I'd like to, anyone who wants to offer their, well, we don't want to go into a lot of long stories, just briefly. She was someone who would not be afraid to ask any questions. She was very inquisitive and very persistent. And she will be missed. So, okay, Marley.
Alice Parkinson was she was very passionate about BRC, and one time it was a couple years ago, and John had left or something, and there was nobody around to collect her dues, and she was like, oh my gosh, you know, no one's here to collect my dues, what do I do, I want to be a member, I want to be, Alice, I'll collect it for you. She goes, oh, thank you. I thought maybe you would have given her she won the lottery. She was so appreciative because she wanted to be a member, and she was not afraid to ask questions. She was not afraid to find out what was going on. And she didn't say too much, but you just knew she was there. And when I found out that we had lost her, I felt really bad. But the fact that she wanted that $20 to be given, you know. And then what happened was the fire happened, and I the check burned. So I called Alice and I told her about it, and I handed it in for her, and she goes, oh, thank you. You know, she was just so appreciative because, you know, she says, oh, and she was, you know, sorry about the fire, but I you know, it was in my responsibility, so I sent it in, but she was so wanting to keep be a member of this organization, and she would do anything to make sure her dues were paid. Thank you.
Okay.
I think Roger's going to speak next. He's going to say, Alice, I remember just a couple about her very distinctive voice. And then also her passion. She also liked reading a heck of a lot. Boy, she'd get to talking at these BRLC Kahlua luncheons, and she'd have a book to talk about, and real enthusiastic. Rod, did you want to say something? Oh, okay.
I always think of Little Alice. I always seem to see her in an elevator someplace. And she's,
yes.
And she's, you know, she fit right under my arm. I mean, she's very
yes.
She was short. But she was from Utah.
That's where you were from too, isn't it? Or Idaho?
I remember telling her that I knew that if you were from Utah and you went to the Utah School for the Deaf and Blind, we'd figure out how old you were by which member of a family called Wheeler was in the school at the same time. This family had a whole series of blind kids that went through the school. She said, "Well, I think Mac was there when I was there." So I never quite figured out how old that made her. But Utah, they still believe in Braille in Utah, and they have a good affiliate there. And I'm from Southern Idaho, so it's kind of next door. And but we'll all miss Alice, and she was a real stalwart of the organization. Thank you.
Thank you, Roger. Anyone else? Can you?
Hi, this is Lee Morton. One thing I also remember about Alice, I think she was a very proud member of her local chapter as well. I guess she had been secretary back since Moses was a corporal almost. And she was so proud, and she said, "And I take the meanest set of minutes, and I'm reading them once a month." And I mean, she was proud of her contribution to all the organizations she belonged to, whether it was BRLC, Kahlua, or local chapter, or CCB in general. And sometimes, I think we all sometimes feel on burnout sometimes and forget why we're here, but I think we ran into Alice Parkinson, you got reminded of why we're here. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Anyone? Is there? It's getting to be about 9:40. So, is there any other business to come before this meeting? Yes. Can you get a mic?
I just wanted to mention that I did attend the BRL meeting in Phoenix, and it was. I thought it went very well. There were some, in addition to the substantive meetings, we had some little game kind of things. I didn't attend some of it, but one of the games that was kind of interesting was Ralph Smitherman, who is the secretary of BRL, brought along some Braille pages with lines of words on them, and each line had embedded in it somewhere what was it? There was some word or phrase that you were supposed to find embedded in the line of words. It was kind of interesting. So, and that's a long series, tradition that we had with BRL. You may remember that back in the days when Julie Esterly was very active in BRLC and BRL, she used to like to do games, and I hear at the Missouri convention they did a Braille slate writing contest or something, and they did a Braille reading contest, and so but the most interesting session was one that was that I'm proud to say that I actually recruited the speaker for. There's a woman, a professor named Jane Aaron from University of Arizona, who is the coordinator of the Teachers of the Blind education program there. And she spoke very passionately about Braille teaching and about teaching people Braille. And even if they have print, even if they can read print to some degree, teaching them Braille, and that, you know, that it doesn't hurt a kid to have two reading media. That a lot of times Braille ends up working better than print does, and it's a lot easier to learn Braille when you're young than it is later on. So she was a great speaker, and I really enjoyed her. And it's good to know that there are still people teachers of the blind and who really care about Braille and who are really, you know, try to inculcate that in their students. So anyway, I wanted to thank the organization for subsidizing my trip to Phoenix. By the way, I think one day it was 114 degrees there.
Yes, I understand.
By the way, one of the great things about Phoenix was that they have people downtown ambassadors, and you can call them or can just flag them on the street. They're all around the downtown area, and they're paid by the downtown merchants. And I discovered I could call them, that if I wanted to go to a restaurant nearby, but I wasn't quite sure where it was, I could call them, and they would walk with us to the restaurant. And just as they brought you to the restaurant, they had a little handheld computer, and on their belt there was a printer, and they printed you out a discount coupon for that restaurant.
Wow.
And they carried cold water, and they took us, Bernice and I went to the light rail and rode the light rail to Tempe. They took us to the light rail station, and they were really very, very useful to us. Thank you.
Oh, there was a question by the convention coordinators. Was that the... Why didn't they publicize it so we could all know about it or something to that effect? I don't know. Carla, yeah. And it was in... it was in the convention program, so pays to read. Okay. Right. Well, thank you, Roger, for a very informative report, you're really a great delegate representative. Jane Eyre had been Judy Jackson's professor at home week. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. I just want to, Is there any problem with the newsletter as it is right now with the Braille Writer? Does everybody like the way it is right now? Great. No, I just want. We ask that every year, and I want to say that at home she can't. Her health isn't always the best, but Winifred Downing is a trooper, and she gets that thing every twice a year the way it's supposed to be. And so I just want to say that if anybody has anything to contribute, or if you want to contribute, send it to Winifred Downing, and her the next issue, the deadline is August the 1st. February. I'm sorry. I said that before. Is it March 1st?
Yeah,
March 1st. It's a deadline for the spring. So, and August 1st is for the fall. So, just March 1st if you want to contribute to it. So, and March 1st. I made a mistake. March.
Yes. Since it's a biannual publication, semi-annual. The deadline for the next issue, which is, if I'm correct, the spring issue, that would be March the 1st. For the fall edition, would be August the 1st. Okay. Are there any other questions or anything else? Yeah. Well,
for the March 1st, will we get an edition before the convention, the spring convention?
I don't think so. When is spring usually comes out in?
It's going to be in May.
In May. We might have one.
Oh, okay. It's just a question.
Yeah, they might.
Oh, the convention dates John just announced are May the 12th through the 15th. Okay. Very good.
Thank you.
Okay, Lynn Laird, with regard to the Braille literacy, is there anything on that? Is Lynn Laird in the room? I guess not. Okay, is there any further business to come for this meeting? We're going to have two guest speakers. Tom Chair is ill with the flu, so he won't be with us. But we have... Well, first of all, we have Rob Turner, who's going to talk about Bookshare. And then Sharon Bacon from the La Jolla Braille Institute, I believe that's La Jolla, is the Braille instructor there and is going to speak about her role as a Braille instructor. And then one of our own members, Evelyn Drewy, is going to speak about the San Diego Service Center for the Blind, is that correct? And talk about her role as a Braille instructor. And I want to thank Lee Morton for looking up these names. They were people, well, I didn't know Sharon Bacon, but I met her yesterday on the way over here. And I want to thank you for providing the names and helping me arrive at a topic, that being, yes, Rob.
Oh, okay. Okay, I'm not going to speak for very long, just a couple of things as far as Bookshare is concerned. Now, again, I just want to remind everybody to let students know that with the education... with the grant from the Office of Special Education Programs, OSEP, I should call it an award, you know, students residing in the United States are still able to get the free membership. So it's important to let people know that. Since I began with Bookshare in 2008, at the beginning of the year, the Bookshare membership has grown from approximately 5,000 to it's 105,000 now, and the number of books has grown from approximately 10,000 to at least 85,000 now. And the thing about the Bookshare library is that our publisher liaison continues to get publishers added to those who are going to be contributing books electronically to Bookshare in most cases. And so some of the latest are the University of Michigan Press, which has I think they've got about 1,000 books, maybe 1,200 books, I don't know the exact number, but there's a lot of books, and they continue to publish a small number of books each year. Some other academic presses, Taylor and Taylor, I'm not familiar, but we've got a lot of the popular ones, Simon & Schuster, Hachette Books is another one that we're getting electronic submissions from, O'Reilly, getting electronic submissions from them. O'Reilly's the computer, books about mostly computers and technology, and so we're getting those. And our engineers continue to work on these converters that convert the various publisher formats into DAISY, so that the navigation, the chapter, and so forth. And we also have the Braille format, the BRF books, so those can be read on refreshable Braille displays, or I guess if somebody wanted to emboss one, they could, although that's a lot of paper, so... I think at some point, and this is not, there's no definite dates or anything yet, but I do know that they're working on an application for various, the iPhone and the iPad. They're looking at getting a DAISY reader, for that platform, and perhaps maybe other
mobile platforms as well. Again, that's still a little ways off, but it's going to be pretty significant for a lot of people once they get that done. Let's see. Are there any questions about Bookshare? And Judy, we had about 10,000 books back, now it's 85,000, yes. Well, there are. I don't know exactly, what other languages. I do know that Tamil and Hindi are two languages that are going to be added. I don't know about that. I can't address that specifically. I do know that our engineers told. Let me repeat her. She was asking about other languages being made available for textbooks and so forth. I was told that once this two languages added, that it's going to be easier for the engineers to add additional languages. Once they know how to do these two and once they're complete, then apparently they'll have procedures in place to make adding other languages a little easier. A part of the problem that Bookshare has, and this is something that a lot of us are working on, is the World Intellectual Property Organization. And the problem is that right now books can't be shared very easily between countries. Each country has its own regulations and rules. So at this point, I think the big breakthrough will come when we can get these intellectual property. Okay, if they did, I missed it. So. Oh, okay. Well, maybe they've had a breakthrough. I hope Roger. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway. And who is this, Roger? Which artist? No, but which artist said this? Stevie Wonder? Oh, Stevie Wonder. Okay, yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that's the thing about the languages. So that's all I have to say about Bookshare, unless anybody wants to ask more questions. Now, I just will go ahead, and I'll repeat the question. Well, yeah. Okay, she's asking about who is using Bookshare. Well, yes, at this point, as time goes on, the students are beginning to become more and more dominant because, they're supported by the Office of Special Education Programs grants. And, of course, so at this point, I figure probably, 97,000 of the members are students and probably 8,000 are non-students. So, and of course, the other thing that's changing, too, with Bookshare is that, when Bookshare began, it was primarily blindness oriented, just because, blind people were taking the lead in volunteering to scan books and get books into the collection. So that's changed more and more now toward the, just like with Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic, it's the same with Bookshare. The percentage of the individuals with other disabilities continues to increase. So we begin to serve more individuals with dyslexia and other learning disabilities as well. A heck of a lot. One of our volunteers, she has actually contributed 5,000 books. One volunteer. Yeah. Judy has a question. Oh, she's going to get a mic.
Okay. Although usually I don't need one, but one of the things that I've noticed is that reference books are sometimes very hard to use. For instance, I was trying to use the Concise Oxford Dictionary of Music, and the trouble is you can't easily look up a term. You know, it's all one massive text file. Is there anything that can be done about, you know, formatting those kinds of reference books to make them more useful? Or does anybody else, you know, besides me, complain about that kind of thing?
Well, I think the DAISY structure, I think one of the problems that we are having...
I was thinking more of, you know, I use BRF for a reference book like that.
Well, okay, does your note taker allow a find command?
You find all 8,000 references to Berlioz, but not the main reference.
Yeah. I don't know about formatting with BRF.
You'd think DAISY would be the way to go if you want a reference?
Let's see, because DAISY, you know, typically has a little bit better navigation where you could actually use the structure of the book. So, in other words, you could start at a high level, like level one, go through the major sections of the book.
Yeah.
You got headings, you got, you know, subheadings, chapters. So, that might be a better approach. Just depending.
I'd like to see it spelled.
You'd like to see... Oh. Oh, yeah. Okay. Got one more question. Okay. Maria's going to ask him.
Yes, I confess. It's Maria. All right. Going... Oh, I don't like this. Okay.
Okay.
The use of the material for students who are not blind. You mentioned the dyslexic. How exactly does that work?
Well, basically the idea is this. One of the things with dyslexia and learning disabilities in general, it turns out that the bimodal sensory approach really helps. I've really been surprised. You know, I've had calls, people, students who have just been, not only students, but adults who have had this experience of hearing the text while they see it on the screen. That's our DAISY reader that performs that function. Now, our books are text-based, so they're always heard through synthetic speech, unless you just want to read them in Braille. But if we have two voices. We have, they're called Acapella is the name of the company. Now, you can purchase their voices and use them as a Sappy 5 voice with any program that you want, you know, that supports Sappy 5. In our particular case, we offer these as complimentary voices that work exclusively with our DAISY readers. I mean, you can't use them with other things when you get them from us. But Heather and Ryan are two quite natural sounding voices. Very, very impressed with the way that Acapella has handled this. So for a lot of our users, they'll download our DAISY reader and they will hear the book spoken with this synthetic speech and see the it highlights as reading each word. And
okay.
So that's why they benefit from this service.
Okay. So then the individual teachers sign up for this, then who wish to utilize your service?
Yes, we have two kinds of memberships. There are individual memberships, just for this, which the students can also have as well. And then there's the organizational memberships, and that's where the schools sign up and make the books available for their students. Through the school. So we've got both kinds. Linda has a question.
Okay. The question is, and let's elaborate on the previous question. The way we used to need to submit certification of vision impairment to be on RFB and D so forth, do the students with diagnosed learning challenges need to submit documentation to that effect?
Yes, they do. Any Bookshare subscriber who wants access to the copyright protected material has to have provided proof of disability. That's the way it works. And at this point, we have either you can submit proof through the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, NLS, or you can also have it through Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic, or if you want to just submit a doctor's note or a note from a professional, you can do that as well. So those are the ways that you can submit proof of disability. Okay. I'll just say real briefly, because I know we're probably getting short on time. I did have had the pleasure of going to Taipei for a seminar on the employment of the blind and visually impaired. And what happened in Taipei is up till 3 years ago, doing massage was exclusively reserved for the blind. And nobody else could do it. They decided 3 years ago that this was, you know, antiquated and just not fair. So the purpose of the seminar was to explore what jobs blind and visually impaired individuals are doing, you know, throughout the world. Now, we had representatives from Hong Kong, Japan, and the United States were the primary speakers. And in my particular role, I spoke as an individual who has both been employed and who also has worked in the rehabilitation system in terms of being employed, providing job accommodation reports, and also the access technology training. So I was able to explain, you know, from my perspective, all the job, you know, various jobs that I knew that the blind and visually impaired were doing, plus just basic, my basic ideas of what I thought it took for a blind person to, or a visually impaired person to be successful. And it was great because they had it was set up so that they could have simultaneous translation. So I could be speaking, doing my speech in English, and of course it was being people with earphones could listen to the Chinese translation. And it was like a UN, felt like a UN conference. It was a lot of fun, and of course they treated us like very important persons. We were treated to a lot of great food and taken to school for the blind in central Taiwan, and I got to see something I heard about, but I'd never had a chance to look at. Noel Runyon, in his talk to the group last convention, I talked about a braille display that used solenoids to pop the pins up and down. And I did get to one of those braille displays, and it really worked well. It didn't have any controls on it whatsoever. It's just strictly a braille display controlled by the computer. And the thing, it weighed about 5 pounds at least. I picked it up. We weren't going to be carrying that one around. But this guy who was using it, he was a seventh grader, and he spoke perfect English. I never could figure out how he did it. He said, "I just learned from the computer." I'm thinking, I don't know about this. This is too good to be true. But anyway, it was quite an experience. They were very caring at the school, I noticed, too. It was very, very much of a family atmosphere, and you really had the feeling that they were going to be well taken care of. The other observation I had was that in terms of mobility, they were really very, very paranoid. You know, if I tried to walk on my own, even just for a few steps, you know, somebody would be taking a hold of my arm and, "Oh, are you okay? Well, you know, where are you going?" You know, they're just really very different. And so one of the things I really tried to emphasize in my talk was that, you know, you need to give blind person a chance to, you know, explore the environment and just get to know on his own. And I mean, don't let the guy walk out in the middle of a busy street. I mean, I'm not saying that, but just give him a chance to explore. So that was one difference I found over there too. But anyway, hey, I've talked long enough. So
thank you, Rob, for an excellent presentation. Thank you very much. Okay, I'm wondering if our speakers have arrived. Who's I'm? I'm sorry. Oh, and also,
yeah. I want to give you a hand. This is your first meeting as president. You did a wonderful job. Let's give him a hand.
Well, I just want to say thank you very much. thank you again for your support. Who would like to speak first? Anyone have... we have two speakers today. Evelyn Drury and from Braille Services in San Diego, and also Sharon Bacon, who I just met yesterday from the San Diego Braille Institute, who are both Braille instructors and can talk about what they do as instructors, and also perhaps something about the agencies they work for. So without any further ado, I want to introduce one of our own members, Evelyn Drury. Let's give her a big hand.
Okay, good morning, everyone. And thanks for inviting me. My name is Evelyn Drury, and I am an instructor at the San Diego Center for the Blind, and obviously that's here in San Diego. I've been there for almost 25 years. So I started when I was about 2 years old. Now, you don't believe that. You're not supposed to believe that. Okay. Let me tell you just a little bit about our Braille classes at the center, and then I'll pass it over to Sharon, whom I have heard the name a lot, and I've never had the pleasure of meeting you, so I'm happy to be able to meet you today. Okay, great. Most of our clients are, well, all of our clients are adults, and if a child becomes vision impaired, they're through the school district, and their needs are met that way. But most of our clients are 18 and older, and as a result, most of my clients are former print readers. Very, very seldom do I ever see someone who's used Braille as a child. And a lot of the clients are actually senior citizens. And what I do when someone comes into my Braille class is I take time, that first class session, to get to know them, to find out maybe what background they have in terms of Braille. And as I said a minute ago, that's usually no background, no experience with Braille in the past. And to get to know what their desires are. What brought you to my Braille class? What would you really like to be able to eventually do? And then we talk in terms of long-term and short-term goals. And, of course, no matter how far you want to go in Braille, you need to start at the beginning. So, ultimately, I almost without exception will put someone's goal down as non-contracted Braille, or some of us old-timers still probably call it grade one Braille. And I have to make a conscious effort to call it non-contracted Braille, because the other just slips off the tongue so easily. But anyway, that is, for the most part, that's going to be my new student's goal, because you have to walk before you can run. And then as we approach the end of non-contracted Braille, then we discuss, you know, is this going to be enough to meet your needs? And really, with our population, a lot of times that's all they do need. And if it is, then great. You walked out of my class smelling like a rose. You've gotten what you came for. Or you may feel, we may feel, you know, at the we're doing our evaluation. No, hey, I've got my momentum up now. Why on earth would I stop? And so that's great. At that point, what I do in terms of my reports is I indicate that that student has met their first goal, and we then establish a new goal, which would be contracted Braille, and they're off and running. And more often than not, it's a seamless transition. They just move right on to the next. And backing up a bit, again, looking at non-contracted Braille, because that's where they all have to spend a lot of time at the beginning. I start them out. First, we must come familiar with the configuration of the Braille cell. And then we work with a pegboard or a marble board. And what a marble board is, it's basically a pegboard, but we use marbles instead of pegs. And that usually works well because a marble is actually more representative of a dot than a peg. But I use both. We become very familiar with the configuration of the Braille cell. Then we start working in with letters. And depending on what's going on with that particular client, I will move them into book one of the Illinois series, or if they have special issues going on, neuropathy due to diabetes or any number of things, where feeling the Braille, reading the Braille at a standard level just isn't going to work, or it's going to be a terrible struggle, I'll put them on jumbo Braille. Because my feeling is I'd rather see them walk away with that than with nothing, or to get so frustrated and give up the class. And so then if it's jumbo, I often wind up doing a lot of special handouts and such for them, which is, that's just fine. So then we complete the alphabet. And again, all the way through the class, we're looking at their particular needs. If somebody comes in and they say, you know, really all I want to be able to do at this point is to be able to read my playing cards. Well, then obviously we're just going to concentrate on being able to read numbers. We'll understand what a number sign is, but then we'll talk about Nemeth, where there is no number sign. And I tell my students right away, you know, this class involves a lot of work, so it really would behoove you to start thinking, how can you start applying this to your daily life? Braille labels, I'll make labels for clients. If, you know, they've learned enough letters to where they can have cinnamon, you know, and a Dymo tape on their spice or something, I'll make labels. And I really urge people to start thinking, how can I put all this hard work to good use in my life right away? And when they can find, they can get a payoff where it's really going to help them personally, that's just about the best motivator there can be. And I try to have my classes, I try to create a relaxed and a fun atmosphere, because Braille can be a very intimidating undertaking, especially for an older client who's functioned all their lives, you know, using print, and this is like, oh my God, I don't know if I'm smart enough to do that. Well, it's not a matter of smarts, it's a matter of sticking to it. And I try to reach them at a human level. You know, relax, the Braille is not going to bite you, and I'm not going to bite you either. And so you make a mistake, and guess what? That means you've learned. And so go with that. Now, we all know that there are people who, despite their best efforts and my best efforts, despite their best efforts, maybe perhaps cannot do it for various reasons. And I always try, it's the hardest thing in the world to have to eventually set a client down and saying, this isn't working for you. And so I always try to engineer it to where they come to that conclusion and they tell me that's much more dignified. And usually it works because people know in their heart of hearts if they're accomplishing it or if not. And when that happens, I try to let them know that maybe the timing isn't right and the door is always open for you to come back and try it again. I have seen situations where a person just couldn't do it and they came back maybe second or third time and by golly, guess what? You know, it worked for them. And I have the gift gab. I could probably go on for a long time and bore you guys silly. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pass the microphone over to Sharon and let her tell her story.
Let's give Evelyn a hand. That's what a wonderful presentation.
Well, good morning. It's great to be here this morning, and I'm very grateful to be invited here today to speak to you. I am Sharon Bacon, and I'm the Braille instructor at the Braille Institute, and we just happen to be down the street a little bit, so we're not far from here. We didn't have a drive to even get here. It was just a short distance to come here. But anyway, let me tell you a little bit about myself. I've been teaching at the Braille Institute for a little over 12 years now. And I began at the Braille Institute as a student myself. And when I lost my sight, I was kind of looking for a place that would help me and strengthen my independence, and I found it at Braille Institute. And as a student there, I just really felt grateful for the service. And our services are free to the blind and vision impaired. And I was so happy not only to have the services, but also just the kind staff that were more than a staff. And that's what I try to be to my students, is more than just a staff person, but someone you can also talk to. And I felt that I can understand sometimes when I get a new student in my class that I know where they're coming from, so I want to be patient with them. I want to hear what their needs, what their goals are, because I've been in their shoes before. So I think that's something that they can relate to and I can relate to too. So I feel very fortunate for that. Our students' average age are 65 and older. So I'm dealing with adults on many levels. And our population, to a big degree, they have macular degeneration as well as other eye diseases, or they've lost their sight to an accident, or different things could have occurred. But since I'm dealing with an older population, again, that might mean being very patient with our students, or even developing different ideas to help them and motivate them to learn Braille. I remember myself, I was very motivated because I enjoyed reading, and once I lost my sight, I still wanted to enjoy reading, and I loved seeing how words were spelled, and that's one thing that helped to motivate me to Braille. When I have a new student, I first sit down with them, and we talk a while before I give them a book or even give them the Braille cell to memorize. So I want them to feel comfortable. I want to make them comfortable in my classroom. And we talk about different ideas and things they like to achieve and to learn. And I'd like to tell you a little story about a lady who came to my class a few years ago. And at first, she didn't want to take Braille, but then she said, oh, I definitely need to. I've lost my sight. So after she learned the alphabet and we were, you know, talking about numbers and how to apply it, she said, you know, Sharon, I'm grateful because I used to be afraid to, in this day and time of identity theft, to ask someone what credit card number or checking account number was. But once I learned the numbers and I brailled it down, I do not have to ask a sighted person anymore that information. I feel very independent, even just learning the numbers. So now I can identify my checking account or credit cards. So she made a little booklet of all her checking accounts or credit card numbers in Braille. So she takes that in her purse, and now she never has to ask an adult what the certain number is. So I'm happy for her, and I feel very proud I could, you know, help her with that. So as I sat down with my students and asked about their goals, we talk a little bit how learning Braille affected me and how I use Braille, and that gives them some ideas. And as Evelyn said, you know, labeling spices is very important because I cook myself, so that's an important goal to shoot for. And also, just know that Braille can be used and applied in many different ways. So we sat down, we talk about the Braille cell, and as Evelyn said, those pegs are kind of strange, as a strange way to identify the little circular dots, but we have to use them sometimes. But I let my students know that you can create your own Braille cells at home using ping pong balls and an egg carton cut in half, so you can go back to basics if you have to. So once we get familiar with the first few letters of the alphabet, we break it down and we go at their speed sometimes, whatever needs to happen. And then we go to our book and we work on the beginning Braille, or non-contracted Braille, and we work on numbers. And I tell them to practice these numbers. As you're in an elevator, you can practice numbers that way. So you don't have to just wait to come to class to look in the book or look in your book at home. Go out there, actually do it. Get a feel for those numbers. So I try to encourage them in every way that I possibly can. As we move on to numbers, even though we may not get past numbers sometimes, because I have students that tell me, I only want to learn numbers. I only want to learn the alphabet, nothing else. Sometimes they change their mind. Sometimes they don't. But the ones that do change their mind, in fact, I had a lady that told me one time, I just want to learn the numbers and that's it, that I'm leaving. But let me tell you, to this day, she learned more than numbers. She even bought one of the label makers. She's labeling her lipsticks to identify her lipsticks, because I told her that idea of myself, and it's very important for you ladies to know what color your lipsticks are. So she's a label maker. Not only does she label her cosmetics, but spices and important mail. So that's one thing that, you know, Braylon's really helped her. So even if we don't finish the alphabet, we make it a certain point. I do introduce the Brailler, even if we haven't finished the alphabet. So I think it's just important, and that encourages some students too, because this is something they can actually, the dots, they can learn it by just making it on the paper, and that makes a lot of students feel very encouraged. So I introduce the, and sometimes instructors wait till after they finish the alphabet, or even the book one, or even sometimes they don't start the Brailler till, you know, grade two Braille. But I like to just, you know, begin at the beginning, getting them familiar with it. So we get to book one, then we go to book two, contracted Braille. A lot of them want to stop there. A lot of them want to keep going with contracted Braille. I've had students that have finished all three books in the Braille series. They go to dictionaries. I have Braille dictionaries in my classroom. I will put a word in grade one, uncontracted Braille, on the card, and I use very long words. You've got to have multiple contractions. And most of my students that are advanced in Braille are able to look up these words in dictionaries. I even take it a step further. I have atlas that have tactile maps. And if there's something currently in the north that's happening in a certain state,
pardon me for interrupting. I'm wondering if we should switch microphones, because that one seems to be dying. Might be.
All right. Okay. As I was saying, I do introduce tactile maps in case there's current events or something happening in the news in a certain state, and my student curious to know where the state is located. I'll let them feel the map and point out the key cities where certain events are happening. So I can use Braille in many different ways, encourage my students every day, and to show how important it is to learn Braille. And one good thing about Braille is it's not going to go away. I feel it's not going to go away. Because how many of you have went to the ladies' room or the men's room and feel comforted in not only feeling that circle or triangle, but just being reinforced by feeling women or men written on that little plaque? So I really feel that Braille is not going to go away. It shouldn't go away. I know with technology, the computer has replaced a lot of things, but believe me, when you ladies pick up a lipstick and color with a Braille label on it, you're really reassured and you really enjoy knowing that you have that great way of identifying different items or products. So I do encourage my students to look to the future, and I tell them that, you know, Braille is here to stay as far as I'm concerned, and I do encourage them. Many of my students have some residual vision, and I encourage them to feel Braille. A lot of them want to still try to look at it, but I do encourage them to prepare for the future, because you never know. Sometimes you may have a vision change, and you really will appreciate having learned the Braille correctly. So, and again, as I said, I have older students. Sometimes they can be a little stubborn, but the main thing is to be very, very patient. Sometimes they have poor sensitivity in their fingers. They may not can even use that index finger, but they'll say, well, Sharon, I can feel better with my ring finger or my index finger, and I still want to learn this Braille. And I'm like, go for it. It's okay, as long as they're motivated to learn it in some way. So teaching Braille these 12 years has learned me a lot. And one thing is that I really feel is that if I'm able to help a student, even if it's just to learn the numbers or to label their lipstick, I'm very happy to be able to do that. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Sharon. That's an excellent presentation also. We've had some really great, two good speakers. And we have time for questions. If does anyone can
yes.
The question was, does anyone learn with Slate and Stylus? And
yes. In fact, I have a teaching tool. I forget what it's called, but basically it's a 19-cell pegboard. And you punch the pegs through. They come through to the opposite side of the unit. So you get the concept how you have to write from right to left and form your, and form your letters backwards in order to be able to turn the paper over and read the way you would want to be reading. So absolutely.
Okay, and I'm sorry. Any other questions?
Oh, okay.
We have more questions.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to make this kind of short question. Do you have any students always, when it comes to Braille, asking I come from the Braille Institute in Los Angeles, so I'm familiar with San Diego Braille. Do you have any students who ask both you, Evelyn, and you, Sharon, of any blind services that people can go ahead and look to involving Braille? Because I think that's very important.
Let me just ask, you mean like how they can use Braille like for things such as bank statements and phone bills? Okay. I'm sure Sharon does it too, but that's one of the things I always talk with my students about, because part of our job is to make sure that people know how they can really put Braille to use for them. And again, that's one of the biggest motivators you can give a person. So yeah, we talk about some restaurants have home menus. You can request your bill in Braille format from the phone company, from AT&T. Verizon offers Braille bills. And if you're not sure if something is available in Braille or not, then ask. And sometimes the more people ask, that plants a seed in some brainware and it gets going.
Also, what's very good to know is that you can get information and documents from Social Security and Supplemental Security in Braille. But again, you have to ask. That's very important.
Reading War and Peace in print to reading War and Peace in Braille. And what I'd like to know is how these ladies help to adjust people's expectations, something perhaps more achievable.
I think that hit a chord with both of us over here. I'll never forget the story. I had a student who was something like 88 years old. And at the time, we had a transcribers group here in San Diego. I was one of their proofreaders, as was another one of my coworkers. And so I was talking to her about her goals, and she says, I want to be able to proofread like you and Linda, and I want to be able to read the Bible. And, you know, I felt like crying because I knew by this time working with that lady that, bless her heart, that just wasn't going to happen. But of course, I couldn't say to her, honey, that's not going to happen. So I said, okay, that sounds like a long-term goal, but right now let's talk about short-term goals. In order to do what you want to do, you're going to need to do this, and then you're going to need to do that. And then you're going to have to read with everything very close together. And I handed her one of my volumes. And I said, and eventually you'll need to be reading like this. And I think that gave her a lot to think about. And as I mentioned earlier, I think so many times if you can help a person see, but not tell them you can't do it, but just help them see what they're really up against, they'll make the decision that's best for them, and they'll do it with dignity. And that's what I think is so important. And I know that struck a chord with Sharon, so I'm going to pass the microphone over.
With many of our students and our population, I've had many of our students come to me and say, Sharon, I used to read to my grandkids, and I'd love to read them, you know, such and such story. I have the exact book at home, and I'll tell you what the book is, and this is the book I want to learn to read, and I want to learn to read it in Braille. And I'll say, well, we'll have to take baby steps. We'll have to take it a little bit at a time. And I know today you'll make that goal of being able to read to your grandchildren again, but we're just going to have to take baby steps, do a little bit at a time. You're going to have to learn your alphabet, and you're going to learn contracted Braille. So let's get started, but it can be done. So I try to encourage them that someday they then will again read to their grandchildren.
I would like to share real quickly, if I may, a little trick that I do with my students who, as I said, most of them were print readers and functioned very well all of their lives reading print, probably never had any inkling that one day they would need Braille. and they come to me, and as those of us who are familiar with Braille know, there's a lot more to learning Braille than just memorizing the code, because the code is very simple and it's very logical. And I have had students, I'm sure Sharon has too, who sit there and they figure out the letters, but I'll be darned if they can come up with a word. C-A-B, C-A-B. Then they feel mortified. Why didn't I get that word cab? And what I tell them is, it's really no problem. Had you seen that in print, you would have said cab without giving it a second thought. You are training your brain to process something it has received tactily instead of visually. That simply takes time. So let's play a game with your brain. As when you sit down to read, visualize a blank piece of paper. Now you've decided the first letter is a C. On that paper, you have a C, and you're seeing it in your mind. Then you do the same thing for A. Then you do it again with a B, so that when you come to the end, you're seeing the word cab. And that can really help. Not everyone learns the same way, but many people are helped when they try to do that. And a fear might be, oh, well, gosh, that's just creating a crutch or an extra hoop to jump through. But in reality, because as they move on with it, they don't need it anymore. They simply stop doing. They put the crutch down because it's no longer necessary. So it's a fun. It helps. I mean, it can help, and it often does.
I also have my little techniques for helping my students remember, and that's repetition. Okay. All right. And I use repetition when I help my students to remember a word. For example, if you have the word cabbage, you spell C-A, C-A-B, C-A-B-B, C-A-B-B-A, C-A-B-B-A-G, C-A-B-B-A-G-E. Once you keep repeating it over and over, you'll remember what the first letter of that word you started was with. If you don't, if you just go letter by letter, by the time you get to the end of the word, you may have forgotten what the first letter. My team tool for that is repetition.
I'm a firm believer in people are all unique. What works great with one person may not do it for another client. And I tell my students, if I tell you something and it doesn't work for you, then don't worry about it. That little tip, that little tidbit didn't work for you. That doesn't mean you can't do it. Just forget I ever said it. Let's find another approach.
I want to thank you, Evelyn Drewy and Sharon Aiken, for excellent presentations. Let's give them both a really big hand. And it's now 10:40, so unfortunately we have to end so Kahlua can come in and begin their meeting. And make sure when you, those of you who are leaving, if you don't already have your meal tickets, make sure and bring them with you. And I want to thank you all for coming and being so supportive. And thank you, Rob, too, for your excellent presentation regarding share and also your review of the trip that you took. And if there's no further ado, business, this meeting is adjourned. And thank you all for coming. Hope you have a wonderful convention, and let's enjoy ourselves. Thank you.